Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. Our guest today is Omar Epps. And we just told him off mic that anytime we see him in a movie or TV show, anytime we see him in a movie or TV show, he's good.
Thank you.
And that's, you know, that's a great hallmark for your life and career.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. Yeah, it's what I love to do. It's what I love to do, and that's what I attribute it to. I got bit by the bug when I was pretty young. And so I've shaped my life, you know, since I was 11 and 12 years old to, you know, towards the arts. And I had training, you know, I went to Performing Arts High School in New York City. Shout out LAG. you know, it's a public school, but the faculty there really cared. You know,
and it's a special school.
It's a special school, you know, and I'll always try to shout them out when I can because, you know, that those teachers there, I wouldn't be here without them, you know, and they instill craftsmanship and sort of artisanship, if you will, within me as a budding actor. And, you know, for me, my career got going pretty fast, actually.
Yeah.
And just been trying to ride the wave.
Well, you know, you're a young veteran, I guess it's fair to say, because you started so young.
Yeah.
But you've had a lot of experience, and you've racked up a lot of credits. From the time you were 17, right? Your first film was Juice at age 17?
And TV and film. I mean, that's the other thing that's interesting, is it wasn't like it was, for some people, they build in one and move to, you did both.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I was talking with a friend the other day, and we were talking about the difference of then and now. Like, then, as I'm sure you remember, then, you know, it was kind of like television was kind of frowned upon.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Like stepchild.
You did films, you don't do television. And so when I came along, it was just at the beginning of that, those lines starting to break apart.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I attribute that timing for me to be able to have, you know, traversed through both.
Well, you did ER and House.
Yeah.
ER and House. Yeah. Medical all over the place.
All right. So I have a really silly question. You remember that old TV commercial where a guy said, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV?
Yeah.
Well, you did play one on TV, and you did it twice.
Yeah.
Once for a season on ER, and then for multiple seasons on House, which is a great show, like ER. So did you pick up anything? Did you have to learn more than just the memorized lines?
If one of us starts choking right now, what are the odds you can save us?
Not now. I will say this about, honestly, like 4 years, because we had an 8-year run.
Yeah.
4 years in the House, it was like I could have put an IV in your arm.
Right.
And felt confident.
Wow.
Because, you know, to your point, it's more than just picking up, you know, verbiage. Just we're going through these motions with medical consultants.
Well, you have to believe it. That's the thing. If you play a spy, we have to believe you can do those things. Mm-hmm. If you play a doctor, we have to believe you could actually be doing what you're doing, or it doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think the way that they attacked specifically the medicine on House was really kind of raw when you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't, you know, just, you know, wheeling someone in. It was very sort of detailed. So we had to be on point.
That I am a as long as that show ran, I'm a House patient. I have all these different illnesses. So that show, and I do have a form of lupus, so you can imagine what I heard all the, it's never lupus.
Right.
Damn it, House. Damn it to hell, House. But it is fascinating. And then you're in a movie that we love, Love and Basketball.
Yeah.
That is and it's still really good.
Still
it's one, I mean, and Sanaa Lathan, she's amazing. But both of you, like, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's certain storytelling that when executed the right way, it transcends time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, Love and Basketball is one of those, you know, it's just the classic love.
Yeah.
Not classic love. So I think it was sort of a fairy tale love story in the sense of, you know, two people who grew up together innocently. They sort of dabbled in dating. Then they grow apart. They date other people. And then they come back together and live happily ever after.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that as well as one of the things that attracted me to that project at the time was the fact that the female character is the one who went on to succeed
yes.
in the basketball. And so the male character had to not take a back seat, but he became more of a support system for her. And, mm-hmm. and I thought at the time that was brilliant, you know?
It was kind of ahead of the curve, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how I see it. And which is one reason I think that was so striking in 2001, was it, I
yeah.
believe? And Gina Prince-Bythewood, I mean, there's a real talent.
Yeah,
there's a real talent.
Super
talented.
The woman
who wrote and directed that film.
Yeah, yeah. She's super talented and kind of a visionary because mm-hmm. she was ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, look, you know, hindsight is 2020, but the subtleties of relationships that she tried to explore, you know, the dynamic between the mother and the daughter, and so that the mother being hard, you know, the dynamic between the mother and father, but... And the son and the father have a good relationship, but then the father goes astray. You know, those are very human stories. I mean, and this is all in one movie.
Yeah.
You know, I thought she did a wonderful job.
Well, it's got layers.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. it has layers. And not too many mainstream movies, which that was,
right.
you know, can offer that.
Right.
And I think that's another reason that it still has a currency.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, you and Sanaa Lathan are just perfect in it.
Thank you.
You guys are really, really solid.
We have some great chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, even just the aging, you know, that's tricky too, to have you go from being teenagers into college and further, and it all works. Yeah, I love that movie. That's all I can say. I love that movie. That's one that whenever it's on, I always, you know, it's like you just can't help it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We all have those, whether yeah. it's Wizard of Oz or anything else, you go, no, this is the rest of my day.
Yeah. Mine is Trading Places.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Stops me in my tracks. Doesn't matter yeah. what's either Trading Places or Godfather 1 or 2.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, geez, Goodfellas is the other one.
The wife is in the room. She knows.
Yeah,
the
she's
truth.
Looking at me like, "What's the other one?" Yeah, there's those are, you know, some
well,
classic films.
You have good taste in film. and of course, we're all chafing at the bit to see The Irishman, Mr. Scorsese's new movie.
Yeah,
which reunites some of the Goodfellas folks, and we've got our fingers tightly crossed. And I've been hearing good things, great things.
Let us pray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've worked, speaking of directors, I mean, you've worked with some of the most talented and prominent black filmmakers mm-hmm. of our generation.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the late John Singleton
yeah.
and Ernest Dickerson mm-hmm. And Gina.
Mm-hmm.
And
Gina Prince-Bythewood.
Tell me about some of that. Now, we just lost John Singleton. It was just a
yeah.
terrible, terrible news.
Yeah.
Young man.
Yeah.
Cut down in his prime.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the name right away, he's the guy who made his reputation with Boys in the Hood, which was a truly groundbreaking film.
Absolutely.
And and in a way, he kind of had the Orson Welles syndrome. He came out of the box with such a superior film
right.
that it was a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
But he kept at it.
Oh yeah,
and
was beloved.
Yes.
Everybody, the most mm-hmm. beautiful stories.
Yeah, John was great, man. I learned a lot from him as an artist and as mm-hmm. a storyteller. It's funny when you were saying he came out the box so hot. It makes me think of like Jay-Z has this quote where they asked him, you know, about his making his first album, and he was mm-hmm. like, "I took my life to write my first album."
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
So then, how do you keep it? And then, so when you say that, I'm like, you know, John had that story brewing in him from film school,
of course.
You know, but to you know, a credit to his genius, he was able to still make a mark. You know, I mean, even up until this year, he's behind Snowfall and
yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a film that never got made. It was based on this book called Makes Me Wanna Holler, by Nathan McCall, I believe. That was a great book, and John wanted to, you know, do the film, and I wanted to do it with him, but we never got the chance. But he was just a masterful storyteller. I learned about detail from him. Everything had a purpose. Everything that you saw visually had a purpose. From set design, it wasn't, you know, set designers, you just slap up a picture. It was like, nah, this has to be a picture of this for this reason, because when I do this shot, I want those words coming out as, you know, he knew how to play with the subconscious of the audience as well. And so layers.
He definitely had those layers.
Yeah. I love that.
And the film you were in was Higher Learning.
Higher Learning, yeah. Poignant film, man. I mean, you've got myself, you got Jennifer Connelly, you've got Ice Cube, Tyra Banks, Michael Rapaport, and you know, the film is it. That's another one that stands. I mean, it's kind of mind blowing if you were to go back and watch that film now, the issues that he was tackling. You know, whether it's, you know, racism and white supremacy or sexism, you know, against women on college campuses and school shootings, even like it, you know, and that film was made 20 something years ago. It's kind of mind blowing to see where we are now in our American society that we're dealing with some of these things like on the forefront.
Yeah.
You know,
well, also you're a writer. You're I think a detailed person in that way. I think you take the world in.
Yeah.
And that started young. My dad was reading about it, that you started writing when you say 12.
Yeah. Wow. That's kind of how I got into acting. The acting became an extension of the writing. So I've been writing short stories and poems, and I used to write music and all that stuff from as long as I could remember. And it just, you know, after I did like my first school play, it kind of, I was in that like, oh, I think this is my muscle. I think this is my tribe, you know? And then I explored that, and I found that at least at that point, that was my outlet. That was my way to express myself. And so it's coming back full circle for me. You know, I wrote a book a couple of years ago, and I've been really digging down into writing, you know, screenplays and stuff like that, because that's the next evolution of my career is producing and writing
and
directing.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about your book.
Yeah.
It's called From Fatherless to Fatherhood.
Yeah. Yeah, it came from a moment that I had when my son was 2 years old that made me question whether growing up without a father had crept into my fatherhood. And so I began this exploration of that thought and just started writing. And as I'm writing, it's like I'm exploring my life, which is a weird thing to do. It's weird to sort of look at yourself as a subject, you know what I mean? But, you know, halfway through, I was like, wow, maybe, you know, my story could be a tool of inspiration to others, you know, because my point of writing the book was to try to help change the narrative across all communities, but specifically for me within the Black community.
Of course.
When it comes to families and fatherhood and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I self-published it, and, it's been a really interesting journey sitting down, talking with groups of people, and seeing how visceral of a reaction I get, you know, from people who've read the book and people who are carrying this baggage, this weight of their own stories and their own, whether it's their mother or father, or all these different dynamics, which it has made me feel good, because it's one of those things, it's like open the door to have the conversation,
right?
And people are able to express themselves, maybe learn from others or how they got through things or how they deal with certain things, and it's been a great journey.
What's the most touching or memorable response that you've had from a reader?
One of the most memorable was this. I think it was in Baltimore, and there was this a woman who, and she was an older woman, and she just, you know, everyone sort of giving their testimony and trying to encourage each other, and she just was so devastated from not having a relationship with a father, and then her child's father is not in her life, and so, you know, the room sort of rallied around her, and you know that didn't mean she was a failure, and you know, there are ways to, you know, sometimes you got to get I'm not going to say therapy, but you got to get advice. Mm-hmm. You got to get in, and how do you deal with breaking the cycle?
Right.
You know, and, right. and we each, everyone has a story. Everyone has something that we've got to, you know, some of it is, they call it generational curses, if you will, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But, you know, it stood out to me because this woman had to be late 50s or 60s. I was just like, wow, man, like some things stay with you for the rest of sure. your life. You know,
sure.
when you talk about those parental connections, I mean, that gets into those, you know, those lifelong questions like, why are we here? How did we get here? You know, yeah. those all begin with, oh, mom and dad. All right, I got that starting point. Mm-hmm. And then you go through your life trying to figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, and even such as myself, you know, not having that connection with my father, you know, it can damage you, you know, or you can use that as fuel, as I did. And I was blessed to have a wonderful mother who just, you know, instilled in me and made me feel valued and of worth at a young age. And so for me, when I was younger, I would take that anger and resentment that's natural for a kid to feel, and I would convert it into fuel to push me forward. And I was able to have this artistic expression to release it, you wow. know? So.
What did your mother think when you started acting?
She was, you know, she was cool with it. Like my mom was, I was just like, you know, cause my mom was, she was a teacher in the Board of Ed for 30 years. So mm-hmm. she was, you know, you're going to go to school, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be, I'm like, and I was like, you know, I'm going to go audition for this performing arts school. She wanted me to go to a different high school. She comes with me to the audition. I auditioned for vocal and acting. And then when we left, she was like, so how do you think you did? And I said, there's no way I didn't get into that school. And she's she's looking at me like, cocky.
Right.
You know, and then so I go to school and I'm doing my thing. And then when I got out, when I graduated, I was like, I think I'm going to take some time to figure out. Because, you know, I'm a kid from Brooklyn. So in New York, it's like you're going to go do stage and, you know. And that summer, I went on this audition and I booked my first gig. And so I'm telling my mom, yeah, I'm doing a movie. And she's kind of like, okay, that's cool. You know, blah, blah, blah. It didn't resonate with my mom until we were at the premiere of Juice and Diana Ross is sitting two seats away from her.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mom was like, that's Diana Ross. Oh, you're really doing a movie. we always laugh when we reminisce about that. But that's when she was like, oh, you're really doing this.
Yeah.
Like
well, that
career.
Would get my attention, too.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm kind of, you know, my personality is more laid back. I'm more of an observer, and mm-hmm. and my process, my creative process is a bit introverted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I was coming home at the time telling her about this scene or this beat, mm-hmm. or I was just, you know, making it seem like it's just another day at work,
mm-hmm.
you know, but when she saw the finished product, she was proud. She was like, wow.
That must have been so special though. I mean, anytime I am a sap, I'm a huge sap. So whenever I see parents with their kids at the Oscars, and I right. say kids as in you are still a kid to your mother.
Right, right.
It doesn't matter if you're 50 years old. When you see that though, and the joy and the pride, I don't think there's anything better. It's something actually, premieres can be crazy, but I look forward to those moments when you see the family together and you see that they're getting to celebrate.
Right.
It's really special. I went to the Trick premiere the other day and I saw your gorgeous wife and son, and it, you know, that it makes me smile. It does, because you're sharing it.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, growing up with my dad doing what he's always done,
mm-hmm.
figuring out at that certain point, okay, he's on TV and that's why people know him. Oh, okay. And he writes books. Okay. But he's my dad.
Right.
And then one day having people start coming up and saying, you know, your dad's the reason I love movies.
Right.
Your dad's the reason that I write about movies. Or you were talking about the cinematographer earlier
mm-hmm.
who said that he, Ernest.
Ernest Dickerson.
Who mm-hmm. said that he, I'm me bragging. He said to my dad that it was his book on cinematography that got him interested.
That's you amazing. Know?
And this is precious. And so it brings me joy to see your son there, because I know that he's sitting there going, that's my dad. That's really cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is that. I mean, you know, whatever you do in life, you know, if you're able to find some level of success, and success is relative, you know, it's what we, as a parent, you do it for your kids, you know. And for me, you know, the flip side for me being this 17-year-old kid from Brooklyn, you know, from a single parent household, you know, And to share that moment with my mom is just like, you know.
Huge.
You know,
it's huge.
All those seeds you planted, you know, they're coming to harvest now. That, yeah. And
I'm not a lawyer, but look who's sitting next to us.
Yeah, yeah. But those are great memories. Because there's nothing like the first. A lot of times people ask, you know, what's your favorite this? And for me, I don't have a favorite, honestly, because every project and every character, that to me, they're all like pieces of a giant mosaic that's incomplete. But there's nothing like the first.
Yeah. You know, and it was juice as well. Yeah. Like that's a big deal. And you know.
And you worked with Tupac Shakur.
Yeah, yeah, I worked with
Which
Tupac.
Which is also mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another.
He was an amazing guy. And one of those people that the energy changes when they walk in the room. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that thing is. We call it X Factor. We call it whatever we call it. But mm-hmm. he had that thing where it was just like
that. It.
Who is that dude? Mm-hmm. Like you wanted to know what's he about? You know, and he you know he was so smart and so talented. You know, he had we had so much fun. Just I'd like to call it doing the dance is what acting is.
It
but
is.
We just had so much fun because we were just sparring and you know and we were kids doing our first film and. He was.
You
know
how old he was?
He was 19, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was recording his first album. He was writing his first album at that time. Mm-hmm. And one of my really great memories is because, you know, like at lunchtime, he'd call me in the trailer and he'd start rapping and saying mm-hmm. something. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And then one morning, he was reading the newspaper and a woman had thrown her baby into an incinerator, which is horrible, right? But. Sad to say, but in New York in those times, like that was normal to hear stories like that. So I was just like, you know, that happens every day, man. It's just messed up. And he was just so affected by it, though, the whole day. He kept talking about it. So lunchtime rolls around and he's like, hey, man, come into the trailer. And I'm like, okay. And he's doing this rap. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Not putting two and two together. And then months later, when his first album comes out and this song, Brenda's Got a Baby, comes on, I'm like, whoa. Like that's what he was writing about from that newspaper article, mm-hmm. and that right there to me encapsulates his genius, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's.
It was pretty
that's
wild.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we had we had a lot of fun and working with Ernest and Sam Jackson and Queen Latifah, mm-hmm. and it was just a great time for. I will say it was for black cinema at that point mm-hmm. because, you know, we'd had our Spike Lee reset the bar.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Game changer.
And he was game changing. And so now is the next wave of was coming. And so I think of Juice. I think of Boys in the Hood. I think mm-hmm. of Menace to Society.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, and all these films were being made and coming out around the same time. So it was a magical time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was a kid and I remember... That's why when people bring up now that they don't know about this, they don't know about that, and I go, oh my God, as a kid, it was the biggest thing.
Right.
You know, I'm born in the 80s. Like, right. That's when it was hitting and hard.
Exactly.
And, you know, for me, like, at the Trick premiere, Marlon Wayans was there.
Right, right.
And I turned around, and he was standing behind me, and I had a heart attack because I am a Wayans Brothers child.
Right.
I love them. Right. Like, I will sit at the altar of Wayans Brothers all day long, all 15,000 of them. I will go.
Right.
You know, it's like, and that's it, the fact that you came up with some of them, and that it's all really, it's special. And that's the thing, we can't make things happen with timing. We can't force situations, but it is really special.
Yeah, and I think when I think back to it now, I think the fact that there was no social media,
of course,
mm-hmm. you know, made things more special. That's one thing I worry about now with not just kids, just people in general, is that we're so inundated with information and content that everything is just disposable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like you think back to certain albums, you would live with that album for like 2-3 years. You would cherish that out. Now it's like it's gone in a week.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing with film and television. Like would live with this thing and you couldn't wait to see it again and I wonder if people still have those types of connections to art. You know, I don't know, but I just feel like social media makes everything so accessible that it's just like, oh, it's not special anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, when you went to Tower Records as a kid, you know, right. growing up here. Like that was, I saved up my allowance and I'd go and I'd buy a CD, and it was a huge deal because that's what I could get.
Right.
That meant nothing else.
Right.
I was getting that CD.
But you had to go and, down there, you were going to browse, and you had to find that thing.
Yeah.
Well, now it's in your pocket.
Yeah. I mean, you know? I do though. In our house, we definitely like things. So we have many a book, a laser disc, a DVD, a Blu-ray. I'm surprised there's not analog somewhere. We have film. We got 35 minutes. We got film downstairs. It's, but I think it is that. I like them to be real.
Right.
And with a CD even, you know, liner notes and things like that, that was really important too.
Exactly.
And
I'm not even mentioning vinyl. I'm just sitting here trying to
we have plenty of vinyl.
You know, but, restraining
but like,
myself.
That was a piece of it too.
Yeah.
And then even with DVDs, they would start to come out with, before it was everything on the DVD, but like there would be interviews or things like that, and it was like you say, like it was precious.
Yeah, you wanted to read the lyrics or who produced that song or who wrote this thing, and you know, you wanted to see the dedications.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like all that stuff to me was part of the package that was being presented, you know, from those artists. So I just I don't know if that has if that still exists, just in a different capacity with you a certain generation, a younger generation.
Sure.
I don't know, but
kids these days.
Yeah, I just you know, because art for me is the thing that makes the world go round.
Of course.
And all forms of art, right? It's like there's art and food are the two equalizers of humanity. It's what keeps us together, because it's where those things strip away your whatever your political thoughts are, whatever your socioeconomic things are, whatever the whole tribalism of it all gets stripped away, and now we're just sitting around eating food.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets hungry, you know. And then and this is how we I've never had this dish from your culture. We'll try this from mine, and it's like, oh wow, I love that now. And this is how we exchange and progress. So that means something to me that people still have that connection to art, you know, because it's what. Even when you look at the art that's being made now, like, you know, you couldn't, no studio would have invested in something like Moonlight 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now you're getting to tell, like, stories to and give a voice to the voiceless.
Yeah.
In essence, and it's all through art, and people are able to learn. People, of course, they're entertained, but it's like for someone who might have been closed-minded in a certain way, they could watch that film and it would give them a different view of people from that, you know, that walk of life. That
it fires empathy,
right?
You know, and which is the key to so much.
Yeah.
Exactly,
it's a key to so many of our issues and problems is a lack of empathy.
Exactly.
But what's exciting about to me, someone like you, someone like Barry Jenkins, is because you really love all of this, and it's a part of you. You are excited to share it and you want to share it.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you meet Ava DuVernay, that woman is one of the most impressive humans ever. Like she is power, and she is lovely and warm. And, you know, it's like, thank you for being the person that's doing that. Barry Jenkins, same thing. We know him from Telluride Film Festival. I would scoop popcorn with him.
Wow.
Like he, you know, he loves movies.
He's another so-called overnight success.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, we love saying, those. You know, 30 years overnight. Great.
Right, right.
But, you know, but that I think, I hope that they will keep a lot of this alive as well.
Yeah.
And even if it's just that we still go to the movies and so you're in a theater with other people.
Right.
I'll take it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, as I say, because we were having you on and your publicists were saying, here are the movies that, you know, they're coming out next. And when I found out that I could see Trick, instead of having to watch it as a link at home, which happens, it's fine, but it was premiering at Screamfest.
Right.
Like, well, let me go see this in a theater, because first of all, it's a scary movie.
Right.
It's much, like, it should be seen in a theater with people.
Right, right, right.
You know, it shouldn't be something where I'm by myself. So, you know, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. And that audience... I just kept laughing.
They were so in it and
raucous. And your point, though, it's one of those things. That was another thing I was, the movie theater is not going to die.
Mm-mm.
And about 5 years ago, well, maybe 7 years ago, like when streaming was really starting to take off, I was kind of concerned about that, because I was thinking, do people even still care about that communal experience? And they do.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a film like Trick or... You know, whether it's, I don't know, Black Panther or, you know what I mean? Like, you know, these films, like, they feel better when it's a community,
when it's shared.
When it's shared.
Exactly.
So.
Well, and there's Ryan Coogler, someone else who loves movies and loves art, and
his career
is
amazing.
He is. He's he's such a gem. Like, he's another one. Like, I get excited because I talked to him and his wife, who's amazing too. Like, and they are so. They want to make things, and they want to support people who are making things.
Right.
And it isn't even that they're just promoting their stuff. They want to make sure that everything gets out there.
Right.
And that camaraderie is so important
when
there are 7,000 streaming services and so much to try to get through.
Yeah. Right.
You know, we do. We joke about in the house. My mom's trying to find a show. She goes, I think it's on free Epic Steps. Download. Yeah. You know, it's so I have so much more appreciation for them knowing that that them talking about something is going to help it get out there.
Right. And that they care. And you know, everyone you just named, to me, I look at them as they're craftsmen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they care about it.
Absolutely.
It's not just cookie cutter, or they take a film course on YouTube.
Right.
You know, it's like people who are actual artists that really get their hands down in the clay and mold and shape, and you can see the difference. But you can see the difference. It's like night and day. It's just like this.
And they all want to teach.
Right.
They all really look to students, and they care for students, which is, again, huge.
Yeah.
You need that.
Yeah.
But premieres can be crazy and they can be a headache and everything else. But at the same time, having the cast come in, and you're all there, and in many cases, it's your first time seeing it.
Right.
And because of this Scream Fest is the kitschy kind of crazy,
right,
people are going nuts, you know, for oh my God, horror, let's go, let's be scared. and the actors who are in it and all of it, it was just, like you say, it gives me hope.
Yeah.
Because I think, let's all sit here.
Yeah, no one wants to lose that experience.
You know,
how about no one? Some people don't care, but I think events like that and premieres like that that invite people to have a good time and doesn't suppress their enthusiasm and says, go ahead, have a good time.
Have a good time.
You can show it here. It's okay. It's all right to be expressive.
Right.
It's all right to, you know, to vocally express yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's that kind of a movie.
Yeah.
Now, and as we speak, as this is going out over, it's not the airwaves anymore.
I don't
it's
know
going
where
over where it's going.
Into the world
ether.
Somewhere.
That's right. It's in the ether. Exactly so. The movie called Trick is available for downloading. It's on VOD.
Perfect
it's
Halloween time.
For digital. Yep. And it's in theaters as well.
Yep.
And you have another film coming out next month.
You overachiever,
this is,
you.
Aristotle is a pickup. And you have another film that's available as of November 22nd digitally, and that's 3022.
Yeah, 3022.
Where you play an astronaut. There's something new for you.
Yeah, I really love this project. I don't know how to not give it away. The cast is incredible.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The cast is incredible, but it's about a group of astronauts who are, it takes place in a distant, not too distant future.
Okay.
Group of astronauts that are going on a mission, and as they're on the mission, something on Earth goes awry. And so I could kind of leave it at that. You know?
Yeah.
It's just, there's space.
Yeah.
There's astronauts.
There's astronauts. And
there's something wrong.
And there's something wrong.
Right. There you
go. But it's a really, it's just a great, grounded story that deals with questions that, just as human beings, you know, those age-old questions that we have, it takes a dive down that path. And it's, you know, I saw a cut of it, and it's really, really, really great.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Congratulations
Thank
on that.
You.
So,
from astronaut to detective, trying to find the murderers. I love it. Good. It's good. You get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, because you were interested from a young age in the arts, interested in expressing yourself through writing, through music, and through acting. Were you also an athlete? Because you've played so many athletes in movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You, I don't know what you've missed. You haven't played a lacrosse,
right?
sir, as of yet.
Right, as of yet.
Coming in 2020.
Well, yeah, I did. I played Pop Warner football when I was growing up.
Oh, well, so, okay.
Yeah, yeah, for the Brooklyn Skyhawks. Mm-hmm. And that was my jam when I was a kid.
All right.
And then as we were all getting bigger, and the hits were getting harder, I was like, maybe I can act like a football player. So I was athletic. You know, I dabbled with martial arts and all that type of stuff, which I think is good for any artist. You know, your body is part of the instrument.
It is,
so you got to be able to, you know, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Well, Mod Squad.
Yeah.
That was all about those, like, being slick and cool. And, oh, God. I remember when that movie came out and everybody was just losing their damn minds because it was like, it's back. It's back, you guys. The outfits are here.
The outfits.
Leather jackets for everyone.
And skinny jeans.
Exactly.
What was the most challenging of all those? I mean, you played baseball player, you played basketball player, you played a football player, and then you played a boxer and against the ropes.
Yeah.
I would think, well, I'm not going to answer your question. I'm asking you, what was the most challenging thing to look believable doing?
For me, it was loving basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, I was like, I played basketball as much as any regular kid. But to, you know, look like, you know, this kid can go to college and he played high school basketball, it was really hard. The training was really strenuous. And because, the way Gina wanted to film it, she didn't want to cut to the ball going in the net. You got to hit the shot.
Oh, God.
And
wow.
So, you know what I mean?
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. And it was interesting because most of filming, as we were going, I was hitting the shots. But that big high school game that they had, and he was supposed to pull up and hit a three, and we went to lunch right before we were going to start shooting that.
Oh, no.
And then we come back from lunch, and I could not hit this shot. To where the extras, who were all like people from the neighborhood and went to the high school, that they start heckling me.
Oh,
and I'm like, damn, this started to feel like a real high school game. Yeah, I forgot how many times I missed, physically on my body, because I'd never played that much basketball.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was pretty tough for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you pulled it off.
Yeah, thank
right.
you.
Yeah.
And without doing too many cuts to the basket.
Yeah.
Continuity.
Yeah.
Wow. What attracts you most? You get offered scripts and you read page one. And page one either says you're going to a foreign country, or you're going to have to acquire a new skill.
Mm-hmm. We are in a submarine.
You know, right.
Or, you know, we're an astronaut in outer space, in a claustrophobic environment. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for?
Honestly, my process is, I kind of reverse engineer in the sense that I'm open. The first time I read a script is like the first time someone's watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it is for me. Like, I'm completely the audience member, and I'm watching this movie, and it's just like if you watch a movie, it either pulls you in or it doesn't, you know. And then if it pulls me in, then I'll go back and read it again, specifically looking at the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the journey of that character? And then I'll come back out again, and I'm looking at all the other, you know, all the other components.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's that simple. It's just like, you know, would I go see this, or would I want to see this, you know? Or would this, you know? And then sometimes it's such an arduous process, you know. Filmmaking is so much harder than what people think, because there's so many moving parts, there's so many variables that have nothing to do with this, the words on the paper that had nothing to do with this. So saying that to say, sometimes you'll read something and it's not quite on the paper, but you can see, well, if they get X, Y, and Z, this could actually be good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can actually pull this off. You know, for instance, go back to Juice. I mean, we had all the, you know, Ernest Dickerson and all that, but the original script to Juice was written 10 years prior.
Oh, my.
So all the verbiage and, like, slang was, like, really old. And it was just like, well, I wouldn't say that. And he was like, don't worry about that. You know what you're supposed to be doing. So you guys just figure that out on your own. Just, you know, make it up to date. So even something like that, you know, if you have someone who reads it and they're stuck and they're like, I don't get it, you know, this is too old. It's just like, no, we're gonna just sort of free flow. You know, we have, like, you know, the dialogue beats and the story beats that you need to hit, but, you know, just don't say jive turkey.
Like that.
You know? But, you know, that for me is that simple of a process.
Well,
I really hope that's your next movie. just don't say jive turkey.
Just don't say jive
turkey. Just don't say jive turkey. That's all we need.
So when did you and Marlon Wayans become friendly? Was it at Performing Arts?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, freshman year of high school. We became friends. Well, first we didn't like each other for no reason, really. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to have this big fight after school, and that never happened. And then we were in the same acting class, and one day we got into a wrestling match, and we kind of were in a stalemate. Like, we had it both. We both had a headlock on each other. You let go. No, you let go. You let go. And then we became best friends after that. Like, wow. We just started hanging out, and we saw those similar qualities within each other, and we were kind of like, I wouldn't say like all the way like class clowns, but we were like the jokesters, you know. Mm-hmm. We were like the jokesters, but when it came time to get to work, and we both were like completely fascinated with acting and all the components of it, and yeah, we just been best friends ever since then. You know, it's like family.
What a wonderful thing to have in your life, to have a friend like that.
Yeah.
A friendship that lasts the decades.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the, you know, besides the personal stuff, like with his family, I mean, it's all like family to me. But, you know, something that I realized in hindsight years ago, but the fact that, you know, his brother Keenan and Damon, they were already kind of, you know, out here and kind of doing it. Like, Keenan was writing with Robert Townsend, mm-hmm. and working with Eddie Murphy. And so it showed me, like, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like the living example of you can actually do this. You just have to align your life towards this purpose. Like, it mm-hmm. can happen. Because I think a lot of times kids from all different walks of life, whatever it is that they want to do, a lot of times they don't have that example
of
it in front of them. So they kind of stifle their own imagination. Yes, like, ah,
if it's
can't.
Just an abstraction.
Yeah. And moving away as a kid, the idea, I mean, you're a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of moving not just away, but to the other coast completely.
Yeah.
That's really daunting.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, for, you know, I'm from the old New York, not the new New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, the industry wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, when I was
yeah.
on the come up, you know, it weren't all these down stages and productions yeah. and all that. Mm-hmm. So the thing was, you know, at a point you're gonna have to come out to LA
yep.
if yeah. you wanna swim with the sharks. That's what it is.
That,
you know?
When both my parents are from New York, and when my dad got Entertainment Tonight in 82, he commuted to LA for 2 years.
Wow.
Until my mother said, I'm done with this now.
Right.
And they moved out here for 2 years, and that was 36 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
They forgot to go back.
Right.
But it's exactly that. It is so different.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like now, you can, you know.
You can do anything.
If you're a New Yorker, if you're a kid, you can just stay out there and
mm-hmm.
just yep. work out there and yep. productions. And so
even
great.
Just to go to Atlanta, you're not nearly as far.
Right.
It's not as scary.
Right.
That's I always say I have the greatest respect for actors and the process of moving.
Yeah.
Because I always think that's a really scary thing to do, honestly. Not just pursuing what you love, but also the idea that you have to move somewhere away so you don't even have like your safety.
Yeah, your comfort zone.
I think
yeah.
that's really... So I think it's brave, and I think you really have to love it to be willing to push yourself and do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with musicians, man.
Of course.
I mean, they got to live on the road, and you got to
yep.
you got to go to where it is. And you know, I think you just need hopefully you have a solid support system, you know,
yes.
with his family and friends, and then you have to find your ground. You have to find that center in yourself, because that part of this life can you know, drive you wayward, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
because you're only on set between these hours and then you're not.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
you're in this place that you're not from, you don't know anyone, and you're yeah. trying to, you know, find your way. So you just really need to be grounded and centered mm-hmm. on the inside. You know?
Well, I have to say, we just met you for the first time, but you certainly seem grounded and centered.
I hope so.
You do. Yeah. You do. And you're raising a family.
Yep.
And,
how long you two crazy kids married?
What are we going on? I was going to say 14. Yeah, it's 14. Finally, the woman got it wrong.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, going on.
And how much say does she have in what you choose to do?
Creatively?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that's my little patch. That's my creative
that
little
true?
Patch.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. But I'll ask her. Like, I'll ask of her, course, you know, what yeah. does she think about this or what she think. But that's, I mean, that's the one thing.
You grab onto.
I got in life. That's so. It's just like it, even in the house. Like I've growing up, I thought, you know, I have a house and I have kids and it's my house. It's like, okay, it's their house. I get it.
Right.
So I got one room in there, though. I'm like, I just need this room for you now. Like, just need my one little, you know, my little safety net.
Wow.
Safety place.
And is great. Your son creative?
He is. He is. All our kids are to a degree. Our oldest, she wants to be an educator. Our youngest daughter.
Following after grandma.
Yeah, following after grandma. And my youngest daughter, she wants to be the triple threat.
Okay.
She's like all about it, you know, singing, dancing. And then our son, he has more of an engineer mind. Like he wants to build roller coasters, which is so specific that
yes.
I love it.
Wow, good for him.
But like his whole life, it hasn't changed. It's like, but now he's, you know, he's kind of dabbling into, I don't want to say artistry in that way. I think he's seeing things differently, you know, thinking from like an engineering perspective.
Yeah.
So he's interested in how things work, and I think that's great because
you
know, that can you can take that to any field.
Curiosity is the greatest quality of all, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us today, Omar.
Thank you for having me.
A real
Thank
pleasure to meet you.
And hopefully, hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll be able to call you a filmmaker.
Oh yeah.
Screenwriter.
Yeah.
That's
knock on wood.
It's gonna happen. You've met you. I think we know it's gonna happen.
And your book is called From Fatherless to Fatherhood. Yep. I assume go to Amazon or any.
Yeah, you can go to Amazon and on Lulu.com, LULU.com.
Good.
Yeah.
And your two current films are Trick and 3022, the year 3022.
Yeah.
And thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Are you really a social media?
I'm a social media. Yeah, I'm at Omar Epps on Instagram,
the
Twitter,
all the things.
The internets.
That's okay. Right.
And for us, Jess?
You are at Leonard Maltin, and I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And you can go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
This is true. We're also on Patreon.
Maltreon.
Yes.
Come support the Maltreon.
Patreon.com/Maltin on movies and help us keep doing what we're doing.
Yep.
And we'll see you folks next time. Bye-bye. Today's episode of Maltin on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.